And welcome to everybody over on YouTube. Well, actually, it's not over on YouTube because we're on YouTube as well. So thanks for joining us on YouTube here on Channel 2600 for Off the Hook Overtime. Kyle, did you make it okay?
Sure, everything's fine. It's just
did you hurt yourself there? Over.
Wow.
That looked spectacular. You knocked over everything.
I was just putting the phone down.
I put the bottle down,
then
too.
My headphones knocked over my microphone. Okay. Catastrophe. Yeah,
I'm here. Thank God you didn't do that over the radio.
And I stuck the landing. I'm here.
All right,
yes.
Good. And we have Skype land. We have Rob, Kila.
Hello.
We are here.
Where the hell is Alex?
Alex will be back when he can. He is going from his workplace to his home.
He's commuting during the show?
Yes, he has responsibilities.
This is a okay, you know what? We'll talk about this off air.
I believe yes.
Okay. Well then, that's a shame because the story I wanted to get his opinion on about hacktivism law. We'll get to it. We'll just get to it in a little bit, I guess. And hopefully he's there.
Keep it in the stack, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting show. Good conversation. I have a feeling I'm going to be looking for a new Mastodon instance, but that's okay. It's all right. It's a learning process. I hold no ill. I've never talked rudely to people. I always try and be. In my life, I certainly have. But I'm saying in this particular set of circumstances, I've made it clear when I've been mistaken or don't know something. Can't say it's always gone the same way in my direction though, but. If you have suggestions, you can email us, oth@2600.com, at the Mastodon instance that you're happy with. A lot of them are closed, though. A lot of them you can't get accounts on, so there's that. And I think the reason I wound up on this one was because it was open, or because I got invited, I think. I don't know. It's too much work. I mean, for God's sake, Twitter was so simple. Of course, look what happened to it.
Oh. Won't you please think of the children in the future?
Why? Their children reading these things? They
well,
shouldn't
it's,
be.
It's all part of this. Why,
yeah. Children should have their own.
Should be concerned.
Have your own damn internet.
Yeah.
Get off our internet. Go on your internet. And you know, it's like a school, you know, middle school, you stay over there. High school's over there. I don't know. Okay. So in Canada, something rather weird happened. The time signal ended. Did you hear about this? A series of crackly pips and beeps that have been broadcast to radios across Canada. They've outlasted two monarchs, 13 prime ministers, 27 sessions of parliament, and all kinds of fractures to national unity. They've provided a quiet comfort to citizens abroad and inspired music and artworks. And I don't even know what it sounds like. Huh. I think I've heard a time signal from Canada. In fact, I know I have. I'm not sure if that's what this is talking about. But anyway, last week, after 84 years, Canada's public broadcaster announced the termination of its official time signal, abruptly ending the longest-running radio program in the country's history. Yes, it's a radio program. It just goes beep, but it's still a radio program. Yeah, just like we are, technically. The news broke in a manner similar to the time signal overlooked amid a frenzy of larger, more globally relevant stories. The way it disappeared so unceremoniously really took people by surprise, said Craig Baird, host of the podcast Canadian History X. They missed the chance to say goodbye. It was like missing the series finale of a show that you've watched for years. I'm not sure how they would say goodbye if all they do is tell the time. Since November 5th, remember the time lady? What was it? 936-121? No, 936-1212 in New York was the old number. Then it turned into 976-1212. Or is that the weather? No, I think it might be 1616. Do they even exist anymore? Are there 976 numbers? This is a question for Rebel.
I have a phone. Maybe.
No, when... no, because it might cost $50 to call.
Yeah, let somebody else do it, but we can test this. We'll get an answer. Slow down. You don't want to bite off more telephony than you can handle.
No, that's true. Since November 5th, 1939, CBC Radio 1 has broadcast the National Research Council time signal once a day. You know, I listen to CBC Radio 1, and somehow I've never heard this. And I guess it's not what I was thinking of, because what I was thinking of was a station that was always there broadcasting time beeps and things. I'll look into this and be a little more prepared. But basically, that particular once-a-day event advised listeners of the beginning of the long dash, and that would mark the beginning of the hour, 1 o'clock in Ontario, 10 in the morning in British Columbia. Oh, that's why. 1 o'clock in Eastern time, way before I get up. Canadians set their watches and even clocks to it. Trains were more punctual. Sailors could navigate more precisely. And as the time signal persisted over generations, it transformed into a cultural bedrock of the country. Even if you weren't a frequent listener to the CBC, most people have heard it at least once in their lifetimes, said Baird. And so while it persisted for so long, it's not something people thought about much until it was gone. Ain't that the truth? So many things. As Canadians make sense of the loss, this is a serious story here, a sense of grief and frustration has taken hold. Listeners to Baird's show shared memories, including one woman who trained her dog to sit for a treat when the long dash was broadcast. An informal poll of his listeners and followers on social media found the vast majority wanted the time signal back, if only to say goodbye. Okay, I'm not exactly sure, Canada, what's going on here. You want to say goodbye to a beep? I guess. Sure, why not? I'm not sure how we're going to pull that off. You can't say a noise is your friend, said Saab Boothrod, British Columbia-based artist, but it was a sound that resonated, and it touched many people at the same time. It brought us together like few things can. For Boothrod, the time signal, a piece of auditory punctuation mark that has remained a constant over the years, or was a punctuation mark. When she began selling a tea towel printed with the long dash, they quickly became a bestseller. I had no idea it was going to catch on, but it means a lot to a lot of Canadians, even those outside the country. It's something we can hang on to. But in 2019, as the public broadcaster celebrated the 80th anniversary of the time signal, journalist Lawrence Wall, announcer of Time Signal in Ottawa, told the CBC he didn't envision the network changing the signal or, heaven forbid, dropping it fully. People still like to listen to it, and I still run into people who say, aren't you the guy who does the time signal? Not aren't you the guy who does the news in Ottawa? So it's that time signal that really resonates with them, and I think it always will. Another broadcaster, Stefan Rukavina, posted that when he was asked to record the preamble, the famous long dash line, I really felt like I'd made it. Wow, that's somewhat of a low bar. It was the broadcaster's gradual shift from over-the-air radio signals to satellite and internet-based transmissions that marked the end of the time signal. We share the nostalgia that many people have towards the daily time announcement, but Canadians also depend on us for accurate information, CBC spokesperson Emma Iannetta said in a statement. With all of the different distribution methods we use today, we can no longer ensure that the time announcement can be accurate. I'm not sure what changed, but okay. In one instance, the CBC had to drop the 10 seconds of silence in the preamble to the time signal because silence confused modern systems. Yeah, that sounds like a problem with the modern systems, not with the time signal. The NRC, which is not the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, it's some organization in Canada, which I should know, they said the installation of digital radio transmitters in 2018 led to a delay of up to 9 seconds. The NRC says cesium atomic clocks remain the world's best timekeepers. A cesium fountain clock in the United States, NIST F2, is accurate within 1 second over 300 million years. Just a little asterisk to that. I believe that's the kind of clock we have. We have an atomic clock. That's how it labels itself. It's the only clock in the entire complex that does not have the right time. And the reason for that is because it has to receive a time signal. And that time signal comes from Colorado. And you cannot receive that signal inside. You can only receive it outside. So it doesn't receive the signal, and the clock gets basically slower and slower. Not slower, but just it falls off by up to 2 minutes in a couple of months. So literally every month we have to take that clock outside so it gets the signal and stays accurate. So that's not exactly what you would envision with an atomic clock being accurate within 1 second over 300 million years. Yeah, as long as we keep going outside and getting the signal from Colorado.
Well, that's not the clock. That's a receiver.
In the clock.
Well, right, but it's synced with a larger clock installation,
right,
that is a scientific instrument.
That clock is accurate.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to drive out to Colorado to get the time.
Right, you're talking about the device that the consumer has.
Oh, so you're saying the clock is NISTF2. That's in Colorado. No, it's not. Wherever that happens to be, that might be in the Naval Observatory.
Yeah.
We're going to get all kinds of corrections. But
well, and like we have a network clock that is probably tuned to one of those cesium waterfall.
The network clock works well. Oh, you know what? I'm arguing against what I'm saying here. I'm arguing for digital technology. But
well,
it does work.
Different,
well,
if it's a different system and it's been well developed, I mean, it's mature and it's used widely in switching and routing and networks that right, need well, it and rely on
you
it.
You know what? I like the digital system, but I also like the old system. So bring the damn time signal back, please, CBC. Boothroyd said the decision by CBC is puzzling, especially because most Canadians no longer set their clocks by the signal. Instead, the pause was a moment of respite in a busy day. There's a beautiful heaviness to the time signal. It makes us stop. We need to stop, and that's a good thing. We're in a world that moves so fast. Technology is the reason we don't have it anymore. But I wonder, what is technology offering us to replace what we've lost? Wow, that was from The Guardian. And boy, they really dive into a story when they start. The Canadian time signal. I'm going to try and find an audio recording of that so we can share that with listeners. I don't know. Has anybody ever heard this? Oh, Alex, you're back. Welcome back.
Yeah, this is a really sweet story, I think, because it is something that generations of Canadians have had as part of the background in their daily lives. And it reminds me slightly of many years ago on this program, we spoke about the end of, we were speaking about historical clock network services that existed in this country, like back in the 1930s, I think, or 50s or whatever. But it was the history of those early, like basically subscription type services where a master company would have a connection to clocks in like a school or an office building or something. And they would check the time with like some sort of central device. And I don't know if those were wired or wireless situations, but
I remember that in my school, the clock would stop at 2 minutes to, and it would just sit there for a minute. And then when that minute was through, it would jump ahead. Did it do mm-hmm. that for you?
I seem to remember something like this, yeah. And there were lots of these old systems like still installed in buildings, but of course the service that they would connect to no longer exists. And I think then you're just you've got a regular clock. But it's always a bit interesting when something that is so superseded by modern technology still has to be switched off and come to an end like this. And I could see why they miss it and want to, in some fashion, say goodbye.
I don't know. I feel like we're just letting go of too many things just because we feel we have to move on. And, you know, we can move on and also hold on, right?
Yeah, but the modernization of and the advantage of those newer transmitters basically disrupted the accuracy of that older system, so it has been superseded in a way, and they're waxing poetic and celebrating its history, but it's not really the best solution going forward. Its purpose, there's so many other forms. I think that's the other sort of line or theme and thread in the article. I'm done.
Yeah, well, you know, I found the signal
sure
over on YouTube. So yeah, we're on YouTube and we're playing YouTube. So let's take a listen to what supposedly is the NRC time signal on CBC Radio 1. It says off by 1 second. Let's see what that means.
National Research Council official time signal. The beginning of the long dash indicates exactly 10 o'clock Pacific Daylight Saving Time.
Okay, I guess that was it. That's the whole thing. Wow, I've never heard that. And I guess now I never will.
So it's like pulse tones and then a bit of like a metronome tick and then that longer tone.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting. I could see that being comforting and very much reminds me of Top of the Hour when you're watching BBC or listening to one of their channels. They always, I think, cut to a chime or it's part of their broadcast workflow. They can activate it to cue time and people can then adjust their clocks accordingly and reliably.
CHU, that was the station I was thinking of. That is a time state. I don't know if it's still on the air. I'll try to find it, but I don't know if they stream though. And I don't know I just looked it up. It's at 3330 kilohertz, 7335 kilohertz, and 14670 kilohertz. So if you have a shortwave radio, you can find that station and listen to it. And I'm going to try and find it, see if it streams online. But it would be kind of self-defeating streaming online because the time wouldn't be accurate then.
It's true. Really quickly, two things. Number one, I found an article from the New York Times from March of 2002 saying that at that time, AT&T was stopping billing for new 900 numbers. And then they were stopping billing for existing 900 numbers at the end of 2002. So I think that was apparently Verizon was the only carrier for a long time that was still charging for them. So piece number one, they kind of hit a sharp decline about 20 years ago. And also greetings to the 37 people who are currently hanging with us on YouTube. Greetings, especially to our chat stalwarts. We're always happy to have you here. Thank you to Tim in Connecticut for letting us know that we sound good. And thank you to everybody for the warm welcome back because we haven't had the live chat in 3 weeks. So happy you all are here. Please feel free to share with us any questions you have. Want to try something new. And if there's a question you'd like to specifically ask any of us on the radio, please preface your question with either the letters AIR or OTH. And let's see if we can do a better job of figuring out what needs to go to air. So that's what we're going to try tonight. And thanks, everybody.
Yes, indeed. And I understand we have a phone call, even though we didn't give out the phone number. Is that right, Kyle?
Yeah, we do have a phone call, and they are still connected. Go easy, though, because that might be one of those. It might be like a really spicy line by this point, because they've been waiting a while.
Yeah, but we didn't ask people to call yet. So
they're still there. What do you want me to do? Hang up?
I'm just saying you can't be upset at us for taking a long time to pick up when we didn't ask for calls yet. So it's a courtesy that we're going to this line.
Just watch it. Watch it.
Nobody knows the phone number. Maybe we changed it. Good evening. You're on Off the Overtime. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm Santiago from Madrid.
Sorry?
A friend from Spain.
Oh, okay.
Santiago.
Uh-huh. How are you doing?
The quality of this call is not very good. From time to time, I heard like garbled instead of words. So hopefully it will go okay. Can you hear me well?
Yeah, we hear you fine. Hopefully people on YouTube can hear. If not, tell us in the chat. But I'm pretty sure all the levels are good this week.
Okay, cool. Yes, you were sounding very good on YouTube. It was just when I joined it by phone like 15 minutes ago. And I'm not the mad. I'm grateful that you didn't hang up. And yeah, that's cool. So I'm coming now to announce that the automatic transcripts of the program are finished after 20 days, and that I'm going to publish the website. It is a web 1.0 website, so like old school website, uh-huh. And the domain is offthehook.cc.
Offthehook.cc. So okay,
.cc.
What you've done is you've made transcripts of the show for what period?
Since 1989 up until last month.
Oh my God! How did you do that? Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know how accurate they are, but it should be interesting to see that. And
you can find out very soon. So it took like it did like 135 shows per day, and the GPU was working 100%. So it was like full time for 20 days, You let me know how the quality it is, because I just made some random pieces.
I'm fascinated by the technology involved here, and I'm sure we'll find some comical lapses, because that's inevitable. But the fact that it's something, it'll benefit a lot of people that, people who can't hear for one thing. But it should be interesting, and maybe we can, offer corrections when we have the time to do that. But there's an awful lot of shows out there. I can't believe it only took you a month to do this.
So you can try to do the corrections, but it will be a lot of work. So I think it's not worth it. So let's see. So I'm going to publish right now. So it should be live now.
Okay. Now, how does it work as far as identifying who's speaking, or does it not do that?
I'm sorry, can you repeat?
Does it identify? I mean, I don't see how it could identify who is speaking.
No.
Yeah, it just gives it just gives whatever words.
Future AI. Maybe we'll be able to do that. But by now, it's just like a long text.
Okay. I want to see how it handles Eric Adams speaking Spanish. I want to see what it does there.
Well, it was like something very robotic. Uh-huh. And I was thinking, if I receive a robocall, in that talking like that, like a robot in Spanish from a person that doesn't speak Spanish, I will laugh and I will hang up and not vote for that person, most probably. So, I don't know.
Wow. Well, this is a good example of what Off the Hook listeners can accomplish when they just take on a project, and we welcome that, because it's technological innovation and just playing around with technology. That's what we do. That's what we always strive for. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But that's how you learn. That's how you move forward.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, indeed. And if you want, I can tell you a bit more about this project.
Sure, go ahead.
What I did.
Go ahead.
So first, I tried the Google Programmer Search Engine. So it's that thing that inserts Google onto your website, and you can search using Google. But it had a big problem, so it only indexes what it wants and when it wants. So I tried, I saw that it was not working, it was very slow, and so I decided to implement the search function on my web server, and it's working fine. So you can search using quotes to search for a specific term. So for example, you can search for Empire State in quotes, and it will only show results about the building, for example. And I also modified the creation date for the text files, so for the transcripts. So the idea is that the creation date for the files, it will match the date when the problem was failed. So you can search by date and order results that day. Maybe you want to see the latest, the most recent matches. I wrote some scripts to automatically download the MP3s and do the transcripts, update the website, and index everything. And those scripts will run automatically on the second each month. So on the second each month, it will automatically process the previous month, and the website should be automatically updated. Let's see how it goes.
I'm looking at offthehook.cc right now, and just like the listener wrote to us, it's simple and it's it works, and that's what a website should do. And yes, I like the look of it.
Cool. So yeah, I hope this will be useful to you and the listeners. If Google decides to index more of this site, it can also attract new listeners. You know, people that search for a specific topic and find this site and discover Off the Hook. So I hope it will be useful.
Wow. This is truly amazing.
That's great. It's a sort of a rough silhouette of what the conversation has been over time. And I love that you just set up like batches, and it sounds like you threw it all at like a graphics processing unit and just let it go and then checked up on it. Was that a part of some of the scripting that you did for this?
So yes, but I did a specific script to download all the history, all the MP3s, and process it. And then I wrote another script that will also process, but it will do more things, like updating the website and indexing so you can use the search.
I just looked up the word elephant to see when that appeared. And the show from actually this year, February 15th, and the quote is this. I say negative all the time. It brings everyone down. Affirmative, affirmative. I like affirmative. It's much more positive. What are some other differences? There are no more elephants. Oh, that's right. And there is only one sort of dance, the robot. No, the robot boogie as well. Oh, true. There are two dances. Now, okay, I don't know when we said this. Okay. Now I have to find out.
This is, I think, where Robin Gila had mentioned that this takes curation and, as I said, a rough silhouette.
No, I like it like this.
Pre-hallucinated.
This will be fun.
Yeah, as you can see, it's not perfect, but I think it works well most of the time.
Uh-huh. Wow. Yes, Rob.
I'm looking at this right now, and it is. I can already tell I'm going to have a lot of fun with this. You know, there are some hiccups. I'm getting some Nginx errors on recent years and things like that. But I love that there is a text search because you can do things like, you know, I wonder on what episode we talked about such and such a thing, put it in. And then even if the transcript itself isn't perfect, we have a show date to then go into the audio archives and find that episode and go back and have a listen. And so I can see this being a very interesting tool for, you know, just researching things, you know, seeing when things happened, historical stuff, when we had certain guests on, things
well,
like that.
Well, Rob, just to clarify, we do have summations of all the shows mm-hmm. online on 2600.com, but this is a transcript of the actual words spoken or
yes.
supposedly. So this could be like when we talked about elephants or whatever. It'll be mm-hmm. a lot more specific and particular.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, this is a very interesting piece of work here, and I think we all really appreciate that you went to all this trouble and that you're putting it up here and everything for folks to use.
You're welcome. Glad you like the site.
Yes, and can't wait to see what you do next.
You kept your word.
Yeah, you did.
Did what you said you were going to do.
Well, regarding next, I have some suggestions. So, talking about the Mastodon incident.
Yes, sure.
If there is a volunteer that can write the rules and guidelines and moderate the instance, I can set up another Mastodon instance. I already have one on my server, so I can set up another one for 2600 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And keep the software updated and so on. But yeah, there is someone to moderate. And
yeah, it sounds like a lot of work. And I just want to make it clear that I do not begrudge the people that put in all the time. I mean, I know it's a thankless job, and I hope what my critiques before were not seen as criticizing them unfairly, or just basically these are growing pains, and I hope to be part of the discussion and make something better.
Mm, yeah, it's good that you always have this last resort of setting up your own Mastodon instance with your own rules and whatever. So that's always an option, and you can migrate your followers. So you can...
Yeah.
If you still have control of the previous account, you can migrate your followers to your new server. So that's good.
Yeah, you know, we've done things like this so many times, running our own bulletin board, basically just, you know, thinking we can do a better job ourselves, and it drives us crazy.
We have
so much time.
We have a tab open for spinning up the, you know, what all that it takes. You know, the instructions are very good. They're clear. It's very similar to other things we've built before, but we have a lot of projects and responsibilities as is.
Yeah.
So it is an option, though.
Wow. All right, listen, it's great hearing from you. Please stay in touch, and we will definitely let you know if we see any issues with this or have any suggestions.
Yes, sure. And, you have an email to contact?
Yes, oth@2600.com. And,
I mean that you have my email to contact me if you want.
Yes,
and this site is right there. So.
Yeah, we might have some questions behind the scenes, and we'll share what we find in exploring the site. But thank you very much, and we'll definitely be in touch with what people get out of it.
And again, the URL for listeners, offthehook.cc, and have fun. Play around with that. That's awesome. Thank you again.
Okay, that's all.
Take care. Bye-bye. Wow. What people in Spain are getting up to? Yes, Gila.
I did want to share a piece of information. Thank you to listener MK on our YouTube chat, who informs us that CHU's frequencies are now 3330, 7850, and 14670.
You sound like the guy in Radio Moscow announcing the frequencies. There's no way to avoid that, but it sounded really cool.
On Radio Free Moscow. Frequencies announce you.
They were never Radio Free. It was always Radio Moscow, but yeah. Wow. Okay, well, as soon as I get the shortwave fired up, maybe somebody can send us an excerpt of that, because I don't think I'm going to get the shortwave fired up anytime soon. But it was always a good signal. CHU, I remember hearing that. It was always pleasant.
We have the antenna, but we got to wait for a good thunderstorm to go put it up.
What, you want to put it up in a thunderstorm?
Isn't that how you do it? You get it like the
That's
good,
how you do it, but I don't signal. Think that's how you're supposed to do it. Okay. Okay, so this is the story that I wanted to bounce off of Alex, involving the Red Cross. There's new guidelines that have been codified to govern the rules of engagement concerning hacktivists involved in ongoing cyber warfare. How about this? Rules. The International Committee of the Red Cross, known as the ICRC, the humanitarian protection organization responsible for promoting international law, has set out 8 rules for hacktivists and another 4 for states to discourage civilian involvement in cyber attacks against other countries. If you're a hacktivist out there, get your pen and paper ready, because these are the rules. The rate at which civilians are becoming involved in international conflicts has been described as a worrying trend by the ICRC, a phenomenon exacerbated by the ongoing war in Ukraine, which has seen for the first time conflict taking place in both the physical and digital space concurrently. That is the first time, but it's certainly one of the biggest times. Specifically named by the ICRC was the IT Army of Ukraine. Yes, they were named by the International Committee of the Red Cross, so their faces must be red. The vigilante band of hacktivists that assembled early in the war using the Telegram messaging platform, they are an example of civilians joining war efforts. The group has since expanded to develop a service that invites anyone to donate computer power to launch autonomous disruptive attacks against Russian targets. Now, one of the 8 new rules surrounding hacktivism efforts explicitly prohibits activities such as this, banning the use of autonomous attack methods and, by extension, historical examples like Stuxnet. The same rule also prohibits the use of attacks that could spill over and disrupt systems away from the intended target. Now, while the attack on Viasat, which took place just an hour before the war in Ukraine officially began, that wasn't listed as an example, it serves as one of the most recent cases of these kinds of spillover attacks. In the weeks that followed, satellite internet users throughout Europe reported issues, and the effects even disrupted wind farms in neighboring countries. The NotPetya worm of 2017 also presents an infamous historical example of cyber attacks, the effects of which spill over and affect targets beyond their intended reach. Okay, well, anyway, let's get into the list of rules that apply to civilian online attackers. So you're a civilian online attacker, write these down or record this. Number 1, do not direct cyber attacks against civilian objects. Number 2, do not use malware or other tools or techniques that spread automatically and damage military objectives and civilian objects indiscriminately. These are good rules for anyone involved in a conflict, I think. 3, when planning a cyber attack against a military objective, do everything feasible to avoid or minimize the effects your operation may have on civilians. Number 4, do not conduct any cyber operation against medical and humanitarian facilities. Do not conduct any cyber attack against objects indispensable to the survival of the population or that can release dangerous forces. That was number five. Number six, do not make threats of violence to spread terror among the civilian population. Always a good rule. Number seven, do not incite violations of international humanitarian law. And number eight, comply with these rules, even if the enemy does not. So many of these rules echo the unspoken code of conduct that's generally understood to be in place in the cybersecurity world, that attacks should not harm civilians or target hospitals, charities, and similar organizations. They're generally understood in most cases, and even the most prolific ransomware groups have shown glimpses that they abide by a moral code. I'm going to say that again because it does sound silly. The most prolific ransomware groups have shown glimpses that they abide by a moral code. However, some cyber criminals still operate without such restrictions. The ICRC said the three main concerns born out of the rise in civilian engagement in digital warfare include increased risk to civilian harm due to the increased number of attacks targeting civilian objects, the risk of civilians exposing themselves to military operations, and the fact the line increasingly blurs between who is a civilian and who is a combatant. All right, just to finish up here, rules for states. The ICRC has also drawn up rules for countries themselves in an effort to dissuade them from tolerating hacktivist activity. I should point out that neither the U.S., Russia, nor China are part of the International Criminal Court, so they pretty much do as they please. The four rules are, number one, if civilian hackers act under the instruction, direction, or control of a state, that state is internationally legally responsible for any conduct of those individuals that is inconsistent with the state's international legal obligations, including international humanitarian law. Number two, states must not encourage civilians or groups to act in violation of international humanitarian law. Number three, states have a due diligence obligation to prevent international humanitarian law violations by civilian hackers on their territory. And finally, number four, states have an obligation to prosecute war crimes and take measures necessary to suppress other IHL violations. What do you think, Alex? Rules for hacktivists?
I think they're kind of interesting. And just preliminarily, can you guys hear me okay? Because I'm using a new set of earbuds.
We actually hear you better than we did before.
Oh, okay.
This might be the best you've ever sounded, in fact.
Oh, that's news to me. Uh-huh. Well, okay, interesting. But, you know, with respect to these rules, I think the subtext of all of them is essentially don't be an idiot. That's really what it's all about here is, you know, don't do things that are going to have unintended consequences and hurt innocent people. And that's generally accepted in any kind of conflict, as you had mentioned, Emmanuel. So I think that it's interesting that they're codified. It's good to see them in writing. You can point to them and reference them, I guess, if you need to. But really, that seems to me to be a lot of common sense. I guess the main fear here, though, is that people who are acting without a lot of common sense could end up creating some kind of cascading cyber event. That's certainly what happened with NotPetya. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that it started with Russia in Ukraine and then traveled all around the world, creating massive amounts of damage. And it seemed, and the intention behind that particular piece of malware seemed to be actually destruction. It wasn't ransom. It wasn't extortion. It was actually the destruction of data. So that, you know, that's a great example of people just doing, you know, really bad, idiotic things with these types of systems. But then it can really blur the line between what's a military target and what's a civilian target. And by crossing these bounds, civilians could be bringing unto themselves and to their neighbors and neighborhoods perhaps some kind of kinetic response that the rest of the community did not necessarily sign up for. And that I think is a big problem. So I welcome these types of codifications, even if they do really just codify common sense.
Yeah, I think the most that we can hope for is that they're simply guidelines that people out there try their best to follow. But it's unrealistic to expect everybody to be on their best behavior while they're engaged in hacker warfare or whatever the term is.
Yeah, and the tactics that are used, I think, by our own militaries, or in the case of Ukraine and some of these conflicts, like in many cases, they're going to have strictures around a lot of that, and try to control and heavily control exactly what they're doing and when. And I think these are, like Alex said, guidelines mainly, I think, as common sense, but also to identify when people are out of those bounds, whether they're doing it commercially or for fun or for ideological purpose and as part of an action or as part of a group. Say, like, you are involved in some stuff and a group wants to do some big automated thing that might be a flag. That might be something that you then maybe say, okay, this could get out of hand. They don't really have a handle on how they're using this. But on the other side of that, I'm also really aware of the idea of dissuading people from doing anything at all. Because the concept of people getting together and doing things collectively in a digital forum is quite scary to nation states, because as much as we might build up the scariness of governments, mm-hmm. I mean, private individuals, private entities, the masses themselves have most of the actual power. We're just not fundamentally organized in the same way as a government or a state or a military actor. And that's a huge fear. So that beginning of the article is, to me, says a lot about the anxiety here that what if people got organized, or what if people were engaged in this activity and it was against us or it was against other people? I mean, look at all the people in the streets now. Mm-hmm. What if that was organized and tied to one of these actions? It goes both ways is basically what I'm saying. So it is, I think of like domestic politics, that like if people were organized and activated, they could be incredibly disruptive. Mm-hmm. But the platforms we like just obsess over and talk and just wallow in are meant essentially to keep us sort of contained in different universes and in ways that don't actually have us asserting our rights and asserting what our grievances are in various ways. And that in a lot of ways is, man, I mean, your imagination could run wild thinking of how powerful that is. And it makes you realize just how important it is to not feel powerless. They want actively people to not be engaging in this, certainly not against the regimes and the actions that their government engages in that they might disagree with. So domestically, you'd never want this domestically. But then, of course, when it comes to strategic interests, it's like, you know, let's go. Bye bye these rules, and we'll turn a blind eye. We don't care. And so I think I just have a lot of different feelings about what this is saying and what the anxieties here are, what the motivations are to put this out. This is, again, this is a UN agency. The ICRC is the International Criminal Court. So they're kind of observing the trends and putting this out there. And as was stated, like, big players like Russia and the US and China are not signatories in the first place.
Well, this was put out by the International Committee of the Red Cross.
Oh, I thought it was ICRC.
I believe they're affiliated.
ICRC. Yeah, it's okay, an arm, not the criminal court, but it is also is.
It would be nice if we joined up. We'd know more about it.
I think it's separate from the UN. I misspoke.
It's shameful that we're not a part of that. But whatever.
We should be signatories and so forth, and so fifth, uh-huh, and uh-huh, the like, etc. Phone line's open.
Okay, we haven't given out the phone number yet. 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. By the way, I found CHU. I'm not sure what this is going to sound like. I don't have an audition button here, but let's see what CHU sounds like according to YouTube. One more minute. Okay, I think we get the idea. I used to listen to that all the time. I was pretty bored, but it was a good strong signal from Canada, and it sounded cool. Has anyone else ever heard that?
Not me.
Rob, you're shaking your head. It's radio. Rob, you're not making any noise. Oh, wait a second. I have you up.
You're muting.
Oh wait, no, I did have the button pushed. I'm sorry. Sorry, Rob. Go ahead.
So dramatic.
Unmute me. I could see how that could be a very reassuring noise. But also, it reminds me of, the previous episode of the show, which I listened to, though I wasn't on. You talked about the alert tones, the alert tone test that everyone got on their mobile phones.
Yes.
Which is the modern equivalent to, which is one modern equivalent to what we used to have back in the days of my youth, which was the emergency broadcast system. Now it's the emergency alert system, but they were the emergency broadcast system tones, which we would get on television every so often. And it's just, you know, it was just a beep, but it's like a nostalgic thing to think back on. Also, the off the air tones and color bar screens that we used to get on television stations at night after they stopped broadcasting live material. And it was just one of those things which like existed in everyone's sort of broadcast environment, and you never really paid much attention to it. But it's interesting to think about now that it's gone.
What you say is so true. I miss TV stations that sign off the air, and that might sound nasty, but when you look at what's actually being broadcast at 3 a.m, it's crap. It's nobody's watching it. It's just garbage. And having either a test pattern or static, which opens up the frequency to more distant stations, that was fun. As a kid, I would turn on my TV and I would find stations. I found stations here on Long Island. I found stations in Boston. Some days I'd get stations in Philadelphia. Once I even got a station all the way from Kansas. It was amazing. Same thing with radio. You can still do that on AM radio, by the way. At night, you can hear distant stations. But it was particularly interesting with television, because all of a sudden you were opened up to this world. And it depended on the atmospheric conditions. Sometimes you would get things from far away. Other times you would not. But it doesn't exist anymore. It's all digital now. You either get the station or you don't. There's no middle ground. There's no distant station that you can maybe hear Rod Serling doing a Twilight Zone in another city or something like that. It's just one of many parts of magic that people don't get to experience, and I really feel bad about that.
Yeah, there was a time more recently when I was doing some work at a television station in the city, and I was in the control room, the broadcast control room, and those color bar screens, which many of us remember seeing overnight. Those color bar screens are still used to, you know, send test signals internally into screens in the station when you're switching things back and forth. And being faced with that image on a TV screen again, I suddenly felt like I was seeing an old friend for the first time in decades. It was a really just warm and fuzzy experience.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I used to collect TV guides back then. This is back in the early 70s. And it was just such mystery involved with the stations you couldn't get, because it would list all the stations in New York City, and I was out on the island, so I was never able to see Channel 25 or Channel 31 or Channel 41 or 47. So when I visited a relative in the city and was able to see those stations for the first time, it was like meeting some kind of fantasy creature. And nobody else could really appreciate that then either, I think. And nobody can appreciate that now, unfortunately. But, you know, I still have some of those issues. I still look back fondly on them and see weird program listings. For instance, Channel 31 would sign on every day at noon with a program called Police Commissioner. And it was a film. It was always the same film, too. It was meant for cops who were being trained and how they should behave. And they had this cop who was sloppy, his shirt wasn't tucked in, and he got a reprimand, and then he improved, and he got a compliment every day at noon. And I would see the listing, you know, in my TV guide, Police Commissioner, what is that? And finally, when I was in the city, I was able to see it, and boy, that was really something. Now that station, Giuliani destroyed that station, by the way. He sold it to the PAX network, and it just has crap on it now all the time. But it used to be owned by New York City, and it was fascinating. Anyway, big tangent there. Lots of bits of old technology that really had magic attached to it. And it's a shame that we just toss it aside. Oh, you know, I'm not saying don't embrace new technology. We should embrace that, of course. But let's not throw out the old technology, because we can always learn something from it. We can always experiment with it. We can always play with it. And it's our history. It's part of what we are all about. We have another phone call. I hear it ringing. Let me bring this up. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to mention how the AI of Mayor Adams, it sounded like the AI learned English as a second language. I'm a Spanish speaker. So
okay.
It's a second review that it wasn't great.
It was horrible. I mean,
Stilted sounding, and
yeah, stilted sounding. I mean, it literally sounded like someone who was not a native speaker. Well, almost, you know, not as bad as Bloomberg, but
but okay. So, you know, maybe there's a level where you program the AI to make me sound crappy or make me sound fluent, and maybe. Mayor Adams, to his credit, said, "You know what? I don't want to sound too polished. I want to sound kind of dumb." And
yeah, unless they meant to do that, yeah, because it was just, I found it like, you know, why would I listen to this if he's going to do it that way?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you'd be like preoccupied with how bad it was and not actually the message.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder who else we'll be getting calls from, you know? Can you imagine getting a call from Trump speaking Mandarin? Wow. Wow. Now you're curious. Now you want the technology to move ahead. You want to hear that. We all want to hear that. Oh, boy. Okay. Anything else, caller?
No, that's about it.
Alex, did you have something for the caller?
Yeah, I did. I wanted to ask the caller, since he's a native Spanish speaker. Now, could you assume for a second, or imagine for a second, that you didn't know that that was an AI and you received that call? And you thought it was that, even though it was a recording, you thought it was Mayor Adams speaking Spanish, even if it was stilted, would you have connected with him in some way because he was making the effort?
I mean, if I thought it was Mayor Adams, you know, I would at least give him credit for attempting it. I mean, I guess like what you guys were saying about Bloomberg attempting. But if I knew if it were an AI doing the same thing, and I would feel like, you know, either, you know, they're not fully using the AI as it could be used. I mean, if you could make it sound like a native speaker or something. I mean, if that's what his attempt was.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the whole issue we had, too, was that there was nothing, there was no preface, there was no warning that this was an AI. So if you heard this and you said, oh, wow, you know, he really can speak and understand Spanish, and there's these complicated sentences coming out of his mouth, and you know, that would be somewhat impressive, right?
I mean, the way it was used, I guess as you guys were talking about it, I wanted to see what it would sound like. Mm-hmm. So it sounded more silly than anything else being an AI program. But if I had no idea what it was, or you know, if I would think that, you know, Mayor Bloom, Adams knows some Spanish.
Yeah, and that's the misleading part of that. So I mean, that you reinforced my conclusion there, that I think there was some kind of that I do think there is an ethical issue with the use of AI without any kind of warning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with people doing AI stuff like that, but it would be, you know, be better if, you know, if there were like a message or a warning or something. This is an AI product, or this is an AI interpretation of something.
Well, I'll bet some agency will get involved and mandate that there has to be a warning on any robocall phone calls that have foreign languages programmed.
Yeah, maybe it'll be a rule that comes from Mastodon.
I'm even thinking someone will coin a phrase and we'll start using a term, some made-up word that describes the phenomena, and it will become common in vernacular. I don't know what the word is, mm-hmm. but there'll be a term for it. You know, lots of times people with technology and things that are kind of abstract, we make up some way of identifying or labeling, and we'll say that that's something, you know, well, it's this kind of thing.
You know how every political ad you hear always has a tag at the end saying paid for by friends of so-and-so. That'll be required.
Or even like those medicine ads, where you have the warnings, like this thing is going to be the best thing for your life, but it may kill you.
Yeah, side effects include death and decay and all. And then they show people having the time of their lives, running around, you know, in the field with a dog and all that. And you know, they're talking about all the ways they could die from taking the medication that they're advertising. Yeah, special. All right. Well, thank you so much for calling.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. Take care.
Bye bye.
How Kyle? How is your arm?
I mean, I don't know if I could pitch right now.
But... No. Maybe this is what pitchers feel like after they pitch a game. That's why they have to wait three or 4 days. Wow. I wouldn't want to be a pitcher then. That's something.
Not bad though. I can press the button to answer phone calls.
If this is the only price to pay for being protected against the full wrath of COVID and the flu and for me shingles.
I'm just amazed that we have these like medicines that mm-hmm. can do all this crazy stuff. There's so much. It's just magical. It's pretty amazing.
Yes. I didn't finish my sentence.
It
would be worth it. Just in case people thought maybe I would say the opposite. Yes, Gila.
Before we take the next caller, because I can hear the phone ringing, I did want to share a really fabulous discussion that's been going on the live chat. Everybody's talking to each other. Where are they? What time is it where they are? And it turns out that we have a listener in Nigeria who's listening to a few people in a senior citizen's home in Nigeria.
Oh, my goodness.
And I just thought that was very cool and wanted to share that.
Wait, does this mean Nigerian senior citizens listen to us? Because that could be a whole untapped market.
Okay.
They are now.
Apparently so. So if our listener in Nigeria could let us know if you were like listening with your colleagues in a senior citizen's home in Nigeria, or if you are listening with a group of Nigerian senior citizens, clarity would be an amazing thing. But, we got people in Spain and the UK and Australia.
But nobody from the United States. Our own country has forsaken us. Right? It's always the way.
But yes, this is a fabulous listener chat community we have going on, which is, I think, kind of what we hoped would happen when we opened up the chat. So glad all 38 of you are with us. That's what I got.
We'll have to look up for more stories from that continent.
I've always wanted to go to Nigeria. Nigeria and Kenya are two countries I really want to go to in that region. So that is something. Okay, so 802-321-4225 is our telephone number, 802-321-HACK. Only on for a couple more minutes. In fact, oh my God, it's 9 o'clock already. So, we'll take one more phone call. How about that? So it's a race now to get to the phones. Whoever wants to speak last, and it's not going to be for very long, whoever calls. So, if you have a speech ready, save it for next week because, we are getting, tired and cranky. I know I am. My arm hurts.
Yes. And we understand, people have to have supper.
Is that people have supper?
Yeah, they're stirring their stew right now, listening to us.
We had dinner here, but we have supper apparently.
I made that up.
Also, our listeners who are in took umbrage at your saying that we didn't have listeners in the U.S. We got folks in the Bay Area, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and thank you, Queens, New York. You are not the only one.
They really took umbrage at an obviously a sarcastic remark. Wow, that's just typical of Americans. Now they're really going to take umbrage.
Umbrage away.
Like making enemies wherever I go. I just that's a hobby of mine.
Slow down.
Can we just give you a sticker down that says content warning?
I think it's the pain in my arm that's just making me more obnoxious. I really believe that. We have a phone call?
Yes, there's a call on the line.
Okay, good evening. You're on Off Talk Overtime.
Eleanor Elizabeth Foreman calling in.
Oh, my goodness. I remember you. It's been a while.
Yeah, well, there's a reason I wasn't allowed to be on the air, and this apparently counts also.
You're not allowed to be? Oh, wait, what kind of rule is that?
Fair campaigns provision.
Oh, because you're part of the BAI board or something like that?
That's right. You're following the rules.
I got reelected.
Oh, congratulations. We still have the champagne downstairs. We should open up a bottle of the bubbly. That's great. Good news.
Thank you. When I was trying to put a Spanish language version of my candidate statement on, and I never succeeded in actually getting it posted, but I used Google Translate, and I put at the top of it an apology that I was using Google Translate, so apologize for, it's not being very good.
Now, you see, this would meet our qualifications. This would meet our qualifications for having a disclaimer admitting what you're doing, which is what we're saying Eric Adams should have.
Yes. So I did that, and I got opinions from people. Some people said even if it's bad, people will like that you tried. And some people said this doesn't say what you wanted to say, so you shouldn't use it. But somehow it never actually got posted, even though I complained to the NES that it wasn't posted. So all of my efforts were in vain. But had it been posted, it would have been clear that I hadn't done the translation myself.
Okay, so I think you're setting the bar here that others should look to when they do something like this, whether it's using AI or using Google Translate. Always tell people what you did.
Yeah, and, otherwise it would be embarrassing. They're making mistakes in my name. I believe at the beginning of the show you were saying something about the COVID shots being plentiful. They are not.
Really?
I've had difficulty trying to make an appointment, and I had to make an appointment at a place I've never been before, and then I didn't manage to be able to get there at the time, and I'm going to have to try again. But apparently there is a shortage, and it's a challenge.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if this will apply in your area, and we're not on the radio now, so we can give out brand names. But we went to CVS, CVS.com, and if you have an account, it makes it easier.
That's what I was using.
Well, then maybe changing the branch or something, because the one that we chose, it had so many options. It was insane. And you could do it at night. You could do it in the morning. It was almost embarrassing how much they had.
Lucky you, not me.
Well, no, I'm saying, you know, it should work anywhere where there's a CVS. If that's, you know, I assume they get it from the same place, and maybe the one you're trying it just doesn't get good supply, or maybe there's a lot of people there.
Well, the human being I got to help me told me that it's a small initial supply,
mm-hmm.
and so there are difficulties because they don't have enough.
Well,
we're getting two different messages.
You're in New York City, I believe, right?
Correct.
Yeah, there's more people there than on Long Island where we did it. So it might involve going to a less populated place, maybe like Westchester or something. I don't know if that's possible for you, but probably be a lot easier to get the vaccine. But I'm sure they're going to have it at some point if you just, get yourself on.
At some point. I want to get it before I get sick again.
Uh-huh.
Smart.
I have a hacker question for you.
Uh-oh.
For all of you. The WBAI elections, if you look at the bottom of the first round, it tells you how many votes were tallied in the first round and how many abstentions there were.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the National Election Supervisors chart saying how many people voted. And they don't add up. There's a discrepancy of 5 votes that the NES says there were that election buddies did not count in the listener election, and 2 votes in the staff one.
Huh.
And another discrepancy at KPFK. And I'm wondering, what do we do with, if there's missing votes that weren't counted and they could affect the... if not the people who won, maybe the runners-up that might get tapped later on, how do we find out what happened?
Well, you're an elected official now, can't you?
Ha! I believe there's a link to look at the raw data, but that's only the ones that they actually counted. How do I get a hold of the ones that weren't counted? That's what I need to know. I have not a clue.
Well, is there an election supervisor you could contact?
Ha, ha, ha. The election supervisor said everything's dandy and her job is over now.
And okay.
She even had an automated reply to emails saying that and giving a link to go to for all the election data, and the link had a typo in it.
Well, what I would suggest, and I really don't know the facts here, but I know Pacifica WBAI has a million mailing lists. If you just pick one of them and get at least one other person interested in this,
I've been emailing.
Okay, but don't take it all on yourself. Is my advice. Get other people interested, and if nobody's interested, then pick your battles, I guess, but maybe other people will get interested. You can at least try with the mailing list, but just be specific as to what your concerns are.
If I forward my emails to you, might you get interested?
I stay away from these things like the plague because they just envelop. I mean, this, you've seen it. What it does to people is just, we will continue to offer advice and support here, and hopefully we get answers.
I hope.
All right. We got to go because it's after 9, and it's good hearing from you again, though. Glad you're well.
Thank you.
And
Are there any of the other people with you who might be interested in figuring out what happened to the missing 5 votes?
What's that, Alex? You're jumping up and down? What's going on? Oh, you're just jumping up and down.
If only I had the time.
Okay, well.
That's not likewise. A no. That's not a no.
Okay, so we just have to make time for Alex somehow. All right, we'll figure out how to do that. Yeah, but, you know, just keep it a topic of conversation, and somebody with the access, if it is an issue, will hopefully take an interest.
Okay.
All right. Good luck with the shot. Keep trying. I guarantee you will find something soon if you just keep trying.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. And that's going to just about do it for us here tonight. Any final words from the folks over in Skype land?
Oh my goodness. So, people are talking about transporters and portable translation devices, which is fantastic. Thank you again to all of you on the chat for joining in with us this evening. And yeah, everybody stay healthy and get your shots, please.
Yes, Alex?
I think it would be interesting to just hear an hour of radio, but it was co-hosted by Rebel and Eleanor.
Okay, well, you know, I'm sure
maybe they could do some fill-ins or something.
Yeah. Probably bump us right off the air. They'll replace us with that for sure.
I'm being serious, too. I think that would be wonderful.
Well, I know you're being serious. You have no sense of humor, so you definitely
that's
being
exactly
serious
right.
when you say these things. So, Pinbot, think it's ridiculous, and maybe it is ridiculous, but it's not a joke. So don't think that.
There you go.
All right. You can write to us, oth@2600.com. We would be happy to hear from you. And again, no content warning necessary. Just spit it all out, and we'll process. We'll be back again next week, I believe. And if all goes well, next week for Overtime in addition. We will talk to you then. Oh, by the way, I should point this out too. This was our first, last week was our first time ever doing a delivery of a new issue digitally. We had released previous issues as back issues, but this was the first time subscribers, digital subscribers, PDF and EPUB, were able to get it en masse, and it worked. This is something that we've been trying to develop for over a decade. And thanks to the efforts of Greg Newby and others, we actually were able to come up with a very unique system that works quite well. More details on 2600.com. It became necessary when Amazon decided to stop supporting magazines and really hurt a lot of smaller zines out there. So hopefully this is a way to fight back and to survive. We'll see. All right. We will see you in a week. Good night.